Once a month, we visit with our partners at the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology for a segment we call Underground History. Chelsea Rose of Sula brings in people and stories about archaeology and the intricate and fascinating process of truly unearthing the past. This month, we discuss digging of a different kind, digging into records to set the story straight, or at least straighter. The story this time is the life story of Polly Bemis, who came to the Northwest from China as a teenager in the 1800s and settled in Idaho. Polly has been the subject of a novel and a movie in the past. Now comes Priscilla Weggers, who wrote a new book, Polly Bemis, The Life and Times of a Chinese-American Pioneer. Priscilla is the affiliate assistant professor and volunteer curator at the Asian American Comparative Collection at the University of Idaho. Priscilla, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Jeff. Glad to be here.
Do I have the pronunciation of Polly's last name even close to correct?
Bemis? Yes, absolutely.
Okay, good. I've heard Bemis, too. That's why I thought I'd better
ask. No, you're fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Chelsea Rose, your name I can pronounce.
No, okay. Good morning.
Good. Good to have you back.
Hi, Chelsea.
Hi.
So, Priscilla, start us off. Give us a very rough outline about Polly and essentially why you wanted to set the record straight on who she really was.
Well, Polly was brought forcibly to this country, actually to Idaho in 1872, and she lived here and died in Idaho in 1933. And in 1880, the first record that we have of her in the U.S. Census, she's living with a Euro-American man named Charlie Bemis. And they were not married then. They did not get married until 1894. They were living in Warren, Idaho. And at that time, shortly after their marriage, they moved down to the Salmon River and took up his mining claim there and had a house, garden, animals, and barns and this kind of thing and lived down there until he died in 1922. And it was after their home burned the home burned in August and he died in October. They lived across the river with some friends. But it wouldn't have looked right for Polly to live there with these two bachelor men. And so one of them brought her up to Warren to live for the next couple of years until they could get her house rebuilt. And so she then, when the house was rebuilt in 1924, she moved back down to the river, and she lived there until she died. She probably had a stroke in 1933 and had to be taken out to Grangeville to the county hospital, and then she died there in 1933, was buried in the Grangeville Cemetery, and then about 1985, their home was bought up as a sort of a timeshare, and then so she was then exhumed from the cemetery and brought back and reburied at her house on the river. And of course, her husband, who died in 1922, as I mentioned, he's buried across the river at a different ranch, at the Shep Ranch. And so he's buried where he died, and she was brought back. So they're not buried together, and people think that's kind of weird, but. They're probably not going to be reunited because each one is a little bit of a tourist attraction for people coming on the river. And so, you know, you're not going to give up your, if somebody's coming to see Charlie Bemis and, you know, they're coming to your place, you know, you're probably not going to let him go to be buried with her.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, it wasn't necessarily Chinese custom for a couple to be buried together. They were buried wherever it was most propitious.
Well, let me come to Chelsea about this because we've talked about particularly the repatriation of remains in the Chinese diaspora. And I wonder if Chelsea, if that's a fairly common thing, and not just around the West, but you know anywhere you had people who were of Chinese origin.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can speak to this a little bit, but Priscilla literally wrote the book on this topic as well, so this is probably better fielded for her.
Actually, it was co-edited by me. Well, Sufon Chung was the principal author, and me, Priscilla Weggers, and it's called Chinese American Death Rituals, Respecting the Ancestors. And it does go into detail about Chinese burial customs, both here and in China. And one of the things that is quite interesting is in these days, because, you know, Chinese people want to be able to, particular holidays, such as Qingming, which is kind of like the Chinese Memorial Day, they want to respect the ancestors at their graves. Well, in these days, it's expensive, time-consuming, and so what they've done is, in some cases, they bring the ancestors' remains over to the United States, where they find a really propitious place in a cemetery with, you know, good views and this kind of thing, and then bury them there, and then it's easy to do the proper rituals at the proper times.
I did not realize you were that much of an expert on that part of it too. to the Polybemis thing, is it because there was this novel written about her that got off track?
To get back to why I did this, right? Well, I moved up to Idaho from California in 1979, and of course then, you know, you start to hear, you know, I was an archaeologist, of course, and then you start hearing these stories about the Chinese and Polybemis and so on, and how she was won in a poker game, and I believed all that, and but it wasn't until I was a graduate student in history getting a PhD at the University of Idaho, and my major professor, who taught an undergraduate history course, sent me an undergraduate student because I was researching the Chinese in Idaho, and he wanted her to talk to me about getting background for her term paper. And in return for this, I asked for a copy of her finished term paper. And what I read in there really surprised me, because she interviewed her uncle, who was a boy in Warren during about 1923-24, when Polly was back up in there waiting for her house to be rebuilt. And he said, very emphatically, Polly wasn't won in no poker game.
Oh.
And I thought, wait a minute, you know, and then, so she quizzed him on this. It's like, you know, how did he know that was accurate? And he said, well, that this elderly man that he knew had told him, Otis Morris had told him, and Otis Morris ought to know because his stepfather was one of the witnesses at the Bemis wedding in 1894. And then further on, Otis Morris said, yes, he all the time growing up, he'd never heard anything about it until about 1916, 1917. He started hearing this, you know, sort of like that she was won in a poker game. And then it kind of, like he said, he thought he knew who made that up. And so it was sort of a local legend that, you know, evolved from people thinking there was Sam Goldwyn had mining interests. You know, the movie producer, Sam Goldwyn. And
yeah, the Goldwyn in MGM, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he would come up to Idaho. This is, again, according to Herb McDowell. He would come up in a big touring car and look on his mining interests and go fishing. And he'd pile kids into his car and take them fishing. And so locals were hoping that he would want to make a movie about Polybemis. And it turned out that Sam Goldwyn wasn't that interested in it because he wasn't very interested in things that were made up. so that kind of ended. But then the story didn't die. And I even had communications years ago from a woman who said, well, my parents knew them, and my mother used to talk about how Polly and Charlie would joke about her being one in a poker game. And my take on that is that, well, yeah, they knew, they heard the story, and it became sort of a joke with them, and they could, you know, amuse their friends with it. I mean, and then later, I mean, more, you know, more recently, just a few years ago, it's like there was a 50th anniversary little notice in the paper, and Howard jokes that he won Sybil in a poker game. So, you know, this kind of thing keeps going on, and, you know, as a family joke. Mm-hmm. And Polly denied it right before she died. In 1933, in the Oregonian, a newspaper story about Polly was ill and, you know, going to die soon, and the reporter had interviewed Polly through her nurse. And the headline on the story was, the subhead, patient denies that she was won in a poker game by man who later married her. And I thought, well, you know, here, you know, you've got this story circulating for years, and maybe, you know, you're going to die, and you don't want that story to live on. So you put it to rest.
Priscilla Wagers is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange in this month's edition of Underground History with our partner Chelsea Rose from the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. We're catching up with Priscilla about her book, about Polly Bemis, the life and times of a Chinese-American pioneer, a woman in Idaho with a lot of mystery surrounding her and a lot of embellishment over the years. You can join our conversation here on The Exchange, 800-838-3760 if you're calling in. You can also send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So one in a poker game. I guess we'll work backwards here. The story about her being a prostitute, you differ on that one and do find concubine more likely.
Right, because she was purchased in Portland for $2,500 in 1872. And there is no evidence to suggest that she was ever a prostitute in that she was, you know, her sexual services were sold for money. And the reason I think that she was purchased as a concubine rather than as someone to act as a prostitute was in the 1880 census, and remember she came in 1872, so 1880 census, we don't know how she got away from the Chinese man who owned her, but there's in the 1880 census, there was a column for marital status. And if you had a mark in the first column, you were single. If you had a mark in the second column, you were married. If you had a mark in the third column, you were widowed. So in the she's listed with Charlie Bemis. His mark is in the first column. He's single. Her mark is in the third column. She's a widow. Well, you know, that surprised me. Mm-hmm. Like, wait a minute, what does this mean? And you have to look at Chinese custom to see that having a concubine, and our nearest word is mistress, but it doesn't have that same connotation because a concubine in China lived in the same household mm-hmm. with the man's principal wife and any other wives he might have and other concubines. Now, this would be a wealthy man, of course, who could afford all these women. And so a man coming to the United States who would have to leave his family behind in China, he would want, you know, personal comforts here, and he could buy a woman to be his concubine. And when that man, if that man died or returned to China, she would consider herself a widow. And that's what I think happened, is she was purchased as a concubine, and he would have had exclusive use of her services because it would be shameful to him to share his woman with someone of lower status like Chinese laborers.
So Polly was dealt in a transaction twice then. You're talking about the sale in Portland at least twice.
Twice. Her parents in China sold her, and mm-hmm. this was not uncommon. And, you know, the family was all important. You did anything for the family. If the family needed money for food, they could sell you, and you couldn't complain. And they raised girls to go off to marry and go off into another family. And so girls were pretty, I'm sorry to say, pretty expendable during that time. And so if you could help the family by, you know, bringing in money by them selling you, then you did. And she could have been sold several times on her way down to the coast and coming over to the United States. And so when she was sold again in Portland for $2,500, she said that. And then she said, and she was asked this in later years, and she said, you know, she said, $2,500. She said, don't look it now, and chuckled.
And I think this story is so fascinating, not only because Priscilla has been able to kind of tease out some of this, you know, American fantasy West kind of stuff that gets piled on, but also it highlights how difficult it was for women, Chinese women in particular, but also how the United States, some scholars have started to write about this, not only were there a lot of exclusions placed on Chinese immigrants to the U.S., but there also sometimes were opportunities. For example, Polly had opportunities to be, you know, to do more and to be more independent than she maybe would have in China or under within that community. So it could also offer opportunities for exclusion. And Polly Bemis is such a great story of somebody who was a survivor, and she really had an amazing life. Well, so it's great to see the truth behind that, because it's just as interesting as the fantasy.
So Chelsea, come back to that original point, though, about the American fantasy West. I mean, it does seem to be populated with colorful characters. I mean, was everybody larger than life because they, you know, they were willing to come out here and live this hardscrabble life, or did they just have really good storytellers?
Well, a lot of that, if you look at the primary documents of this time, it tells a little bit of a different story of the secondary documents, like the stuff that people started writing around the turn of the century, where they're memorializing their experiences during the pioneer era, and everybody gets braver, and everything gets more dangerous, and everything gets wilder. So that's really where a lot of this colorful rhetoric that's really ingrained now in the historiography of the American West. But if you, you know, most scholars today are working hard to kind of challenge those myths, and a lot of times there is a little grain of truth, but in reality, it's much more complex. You know, you can't pull Polly's story away from all of these and give it a totally different story. It's just more complicated, and there's a lot more nuance. So a lot of times that's the reality.
Right,
and that allows for a more inclusive history. It shows more agency on the part of a lot of the actors in this history. So, you know, it's still important to do that where we can.
True, but it's interesting to think of it as the second draft of history. We also often talk about journalists as the first draft of history. Well, you know, when people go back and tell the story again, they can add a few things in. And sometimes embellish, exactly, Priscilla. Priscilla is the author of Polly Bemis, The Life and Times of a Chinese-American Pioneer, in this month's edition of Underground History with Chelsea Rose from the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. So, Priscilla, to date, do we know where in China Polly came from and what her original name was?
Okay, well, she came from somewhere in the north because in the census, 1880 census, it says Pekin, P-E-K-I-N, which is the old name for Beijing. So we know she's from the north somewhere.
Which is very unusual at this time. Most
absolutely.
From southern China.
Most from Kwantung.
As an aside, she would not have been able to, she would have spoken Mongolian or maybe we think she might be Daur, which was a D-A-U-R, which is a Chinese minority from up in the Mongolia region. But she could not have communicated speaking to the Chinese who were in Warren, Idaho, because they spoke Cantonese or Taishanese. And if you can read and write, you can write the characters, and the characters are all the same, but the pronunciation of those characters is vastly different. So she would have needed to learn some Cantonese to communicate, or probably English quickly to communicate, even with Chinese people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's true. I've heard that story before about people who spoke Cantonese, and in order to talk to people who knew Mandarin, they just spoke English.
Right. And then the part about her Chinese name, we don't know her Chinese name, and it's likely that we never will. Where people get the name Lalu Nathoi for her comes from a woman named, she was a Catholic nun who wrote a great deal of Idaho history. And in 1947, she wrote a big book about the history of Idaho County and so on. And she said, as you can see from her certificate of marriage, her Chinese name was Lalu Nathoi. Well, when you look in the certificate of marriage, it's Polly, and it's not Nathoi. It's Hathoi with an H, which could have been related to Ah Toy, which was a common Chinese name for women. Well, the fact that it's, you know, if it's not Lalu, what is it? And even her husband, Charlie Bemis, did not know her Chinese name. In 1893, there was a tax assessment. They weren't married then, so Bemis, was listed under Bemis, and Polly was listed under P for with quotes around it under the letter P and then Polly, and then it said also in quotes by C. A. Bemis. In other words, he provided the name Polly, and that was all he knew. He couldn't provide a last name for her, or a first name, because the Polly was in quotes. So even the man who became her husband did not know her name. And what I think is, and this idea is not original to me. In Lewiston, Idaho, there's a Chinese temple, and some boards have come down for people with lists of many, many names of people that donated to the formation of the temple. And there are six women are named, but there are no surnames, just their first names. And this Chinese-American man said he was pretty sure they were prostitutes because they wouldn't want to, dishonor the family name by putting it out there and, you know, calling attention to it. And so it could be that Polly was doing the same. I mean, through no fault of her own, she had, a very hard life. And, it could have brought dishonor onto the family name. So I'm thinking she did not give it out.
Priscilla, did Polly write anything of her own that has survived?
She couldn't read and write. No.
Okay. So
no. Well, Charlie tried to teach her to read, but she got too good at it, and he gave up.
Oh. He got better than her. I mean, she got better than him.
She was going to, and I think he didn't want the competition.
Oh wow! Yikes! Chelsea, give us a sense of how often in this business you reach dead ends looking for full stories of people and places.
Oh, usually, and so I think that archaeologists have a little bit of a different goal in mind.
Mm-hmm.
We just want to know more, and we do mm-hmm. the best we can to try to extrapolate a story from that. But, we're a little bit more comfortable in this gray area of never knowing the full truth. And I think that you have to do what you can to tell these important stories with the limited information you have. For example, one of the artifacts that I read about in Priscilla's book was this sourdough crock. And mm-hmm. I love this artifact because it is such a quintessential Chinese-American part of the story. It's, mm-hmm. it's a Chinese brown glazed stoneware crock that would have come over to the United States filled with pickled, preserved, some kind of food like that, mm-hmm. and it was repurposed for making sourdough bread, one of the most quintessential American pioneer things mm-hmm. you can make. And so I think that, we take items like that and we use those objects to tell us a little bit about the people. And to me, that object has a lot to say about somebody who, was resilient and able to, make her mark as this Chinese American woman in mm-hmm. the frontier of Idaho.
Mm-hmm. Truly, absolutely. So why did it was a mining claim? I guess we already know the answer there.
Yeah.
And Priscilla, we're under a minute here. Polly's last home on the Salmon River still standing? Is that right?
Yes, it is. It's yes, and people can visit it, but you can't just drive to it. You have to come down on a float, float down from Salmon, which takes several days, or take a jet boat from Riggins.
Wow, it is that remote.
It's very remote. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And she and Charlie Bemis are buried on opposite sides of the Salmon River?
Opposite sides of the river, right. That's right.
And historical sites for both?
Her house is on the National Register of Historic Places, and his the place where he is, the ship ranch, I don't think is.
Okay. All right. But certainly some documentation and more documentation now through the publication of Priscilla Wager's book, Polly Bemis, The Life and Times of a Chinese-American Pioneer. No, she was not one in a poker game, it turns out. Priscilla has been our guest in this month's edition of Underground History, brought in by our partner from the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, Chelsea Rose. Chelsea, good to hear from you. Priscilla, good to meet you.
Yeah, great to hear.
All right. Good to have you both here.